A very good evening. Welcome along to another edition of The Score coming up on tonight's programme. We'll be hearing from Kevin McHugh following the confirmation that he will be part of the Harps coaching staff next season. We speak to Richard Kerr on him being awarded the British Superstock Championship this week. Donegal jockey Oisin Orr reflects on what has been a successful year and what is next after his big one in Bahrain with Alex Ferguson. Plus Ryan Ferry of the Donegal News will have a preview of Setanta's Ulster final against Carrickmore on the hurling front this coming weekend. And it's with football we start. Earlier this week it was confirmed that Kevin McHugh has joined the Finharps first team coaching staff as assistant coach and head of development. McHugh is, of course, a club legend where he made over 250 appearances for the club in two stints. And then after he retired back in 2016, he took over as head coach of the club's under-15s and later was appointed the director of the Finharps Academy. McHugh was part of the backroom team for the final number of games last season and now joins Darren Murphy and Eamon Curry in the dugout for 2024. This week, Highlands' Chris Ashmore caught up with the Clay Man as they look forward to next season, and a busy one that it's going to be for McHugh as well.
Well, Kevin, firstly, congratulations. Earlier this week, appointed as assistant coach to Darren Murphy. You're also head of development. Was it an easy decision to make?
I suppose I dipped my toe in around the first team the last month of the season. And I got to know Darren. I got to know a lot of the players that are remaining for 2024. So that was a big factor in my decision. Obviously, I'm hugely involved with the underage in the academy, and Darren knows that, and it was something that he allowed me that space and time just to make sure we could do it, and I could manage both roles, and make sure I wanted to make sure I was giving both roles full attention, and I was able to come up with a solution over a couple of weeks that I was confident that going into 2024 I can be in with the first team and still drive the underage academy project forward, you know.
Well, it's certainly going to be a busy year ahead, not least, I suppose, with the first team. When you look at the travel involved, and we touched on it last season, I think it was 11,000 kilometres somebody worked out that Harps would travel last season. 2024... We have a couple of changes, but if anything, there's probably more travel and two trips to Cork this time around. You're going to spend a lot of time on the road.
Yeah, you're not really selling this. Because maybe if Darren would have done that at the very start, it could have been different. But no, I'm well schooled on the travel end for League Ireland. I've done it for almost 18 years. And being on a bus travelling to play football doesn't bother me. And certainly, when you're coaching, it's funny, the journey goes on a lot quicker when you're a coach rather than when you're a player, because you're constantly thinking about the game, things you can do, and things you're going to be saying in the change room, changes, all those kind of things are going through your head and watching video clips and stuff. So the journey can get a lot shorter as a coach, you know, but you're right, it is. When you're from Donegal, no matter what you're playing underage football or no matter what sport you're doing, you have a lot of travel and they do, and it's just part and parcel of the whole thing. And it's just something that I didn't really even think about, to be honest, because I'm not well used to it. But no, looking forward to getting going. I got to know Darren very well, especially the last few months of the season. And obviously I know Eamon Curry very well as well, so hopefully we can strike up a good working relationship between the three of us and try and get the best out of the group of players that we have for next year.
Well, I needn't tell you how hard it is to get out of the First Division, and I think most people going into 2024 will know that, you know, you're starting again with a team that will see new faces. There'll be a lot of young guys. You'll have retained some of last year's squad, but it's very much a building process, and as Ian Harkin spoke about many times last year, this is all part of a project that's going to take a number of years.
Exactly what Ian's been saying. We've been going round in circles as a club, slow money, good money, after bad money, and you're going up, and you're not ready to go up, and you're coming straight back down. Maybe so then even more money to try and stay up again, and you've nothing to show for it at the end of it all. And to me, I think the club and Ian, who's spearheading it, is going about it in the right direction. We want to be sitting in 2 or 3 years' time with something to show for it. With structures in place and be ready. And will we be ready next year? I don't think so. And the year after, maybe. And the year after that, certainly, we'll be looking to aiming back for the Premier Division. But there's a lot of other clubs in the First Division to be doing the same. So we have no divine right just because we're Finn Harps that we're going to be, just because we have good structures in place, that we're going to be going straight back up the standard of the First Division and the standard of the Premier Division is getting higher and higher each year. You can see that with attendances. I'd be pretty sure probably for the first time ever next year, I would say all the clubs are nearly full-time in the Premier Division. And that filters down then into the First Division with, you'll have a few clubs in the First Division that are full-time as well. So the league, the standard of the league is getting higher each year. And I think as a club, we're doing the smart thing. And I know it's tough for the supporters when we're not winning games and you're not competing the way we want to compete. But it does take time. And to be fair to the fans, last year they stood by the team. And that was a huge help for especially some of the younger players that we will see the benefit of them this year when they were blooded in last year. And the fans stuck by the team even though the performances weren't there. So I think as a club, we need to look back in 2 or 3 years' time and say, yeah, that was a good decision made back in 2022. And basically look after your structures and obviously with the stadium to build, there'll be finances and fundraising for that. So there's a lot of bigger fish to fry for the club in terms of making sure we have a football club in the next few years and making sure that the football club is sustainable and something everybody can be associated with and be proud of, you know, Chris.
Now, I think the sod for the stadium in Stranorla was turned, I think it was May 2008, so that's, 15 years. Just how important, Kevin, is it that, you know, Harps do get this stadium developed? I presume there is a danger that, you know, should the team get promoted in the years to come, Finn Park just wouldn't be acceptable. I think there is a minimum requirement of seats, and there have been derogations in the past. At the end of the day, Harps have to have a stadium that will meet certain standards in a league that seems to be going places.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. And the standard of the league's gone up, so obviously the standard of the license and requirements is going to go up with it. And we can't fall behind that. We're not the only club in the country that needs their facilities upgraded. We've been probably the sad story over the last probably two decades with one thing after another that's delaying the stadium. And without going into too much detail, it's got to the stage now. And even back then, I thought I was going to be playing in it. Surely they hope that I'll be coaching in it or being part of it or watching teams in it in the near future. So we're hoping there's a team of guys, and I know Ian's working around the clock and trying to get things over the line. So it's not like the club is sitting on its hands. There's a huge amount of work and effort going on in the background, and there's a team there trying to progress this whole stadium. So that's all going on in the background, and the resources and that's been put into that is well worthwhile. Because, as you say, facilities is everything. And I think if we can get our facilities right and keep the structures upgrading every year and maintain them, then I've no doubt we'll be in a better place in a few years. But you are right, the stadium is frustrating. It's frustrating for me, it's frustrating for the coaches involved, and frustrating for all these fans that have been waiting all these years. And then again, some people give the club a bit of stick for it, which is kind of unwarranted, because when you're in the inner circle, you can see the work that's going on.
trying to get this over the line. So hopefully in the near future there'll be some news coming out on the stadium, you know.
Which brings us on nicely to the whole area of the academy and the structures. And for a lot of young fellas, you've touched on it there, facilities are vital. And with just the one pitch at Finn Park, you know, training has been an issue. You've used different locations over the years for the academy. And also there's the ladies football coming along as well. You simply, in the modern age, you need to have a stadium with your first team pitch, and you also need to have associated facilities for it. And I'm sure when the stadium does come about, you know, that'll be a great tonic for all involved, and it'll be an added incentive for young fellows, and they'll be looking up to it.
Yeah, it's probably the hardest part of my job at the minute is making sure we have facilities for everybody to train on. Which is not easy, as I meet you now and again down in the community centre. It can be chock-a-block down there, and trying to get the slots in there and making sure everybody's able to train. So, to me, as head of the academy, the most important thing for me is to make sure we have the right people in, coaching the players, the structures are right, what we're teaching them is right, and nice, and the cake will come when the facilities come. So there's no point in having all these nice, shiny new facilities and not having the other stuff right. So we've been working hard over the last 6 or 7 years to make sure we've got these things right for when the facilities come good and that we're in a good place. So we'll keep going that way. There's nothing really we can do. It doesn't really stop us from playing football. It doesn't really stop us from the way we try to coach the game and what we try to teach the players. It does get frustrating at times when you've certain slots that you have to work around, but it is what it is. We and full credit to the coaches and the parents and the players involved, because to play for Twin Harps in the National League, I would be pretty confident in there's no other gig out there that's anywhere near National League as in the competitiveness. The travelling involved, the commitment involved, week in, week out, travelling up and down the country. Anybody coming in, they also are underage. It's a tough gig, so I have to commend the parents and the players involved that want to play National League and test themselves. So for us, facilities is there somewhere in the far distance, but it's certainly not stopping us from doing what we want to do. But once it does come, it'll be a welcome addition to the club. And because as you say, naming out all them teams, like we're not just the first team anymore. We have 10 teams at the club, including the two girls teams, who were a huge success this year coming in. And full credit to Paddy for organising everything there. So hopefully they're looking to build on that for 2024 as well. So facilities is there, but it ain't stopping us from doing what we're trying to do, Chris, you know.
And that is a very important point. You mentioned there are 10 teams at the club. You know, a lot of people forget that apart from the first team, there's so much else that is going on. Just tell us about the National League structure at underage levels and how many teams Harps have and what way the season goes.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's all year round. From January, you'll have the pre-season kicking off, and then the season kicks off in early March, late February, and then that goes the whole way through right up until October. And then once it's over in October, then you start assessments and retrialing again for teams and recruiting. So you basically get the month of December, basically they shut down the academy and give people a rest and a break. And so it is full on, and that's probably where I was coming from with, I really do feel the national leagues in this country are the toughest gig out there. And when you're from Donegal, it's even tougher with the travelling involved. So we've got two girls team playing the national league, and then we have four boys, and then we've obviously got three more academy development squads underneath all that are preparing for national league. So they come in on a weekly basis, and then obviously you've got the first team, which is the top of the tree. There's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of training slots to be filled in. Yeah. A lot of volunteers that work around the clock to keep all this going. So it's good to be involved in. It's growing every year.
Now, if you look at the boys, it's under 13, 15, 17 and 19?
14, 15, 17 and 19.
Yeah. And then the girls?
They're 17 and 19.
And the long-term aim is to have a FinnHarps women's team also competing at national league level, no doubt.
Yeah, that's we're year one in the having our girls squads in the at the club last year, or sorry, this year just passed, and next year will be year two. So every year we have them in, we want to build towards that. And again, there's no point in jumping in with 2 feet. We need to make sure we're ready and make sure everything else is right around it. And the same as the boys' squads, and obviously the same as the seniors. So it's making sure we're not missing out on anything, and we don't want any of the girls or the boys to miss out on anything. But at the same time, you have to make sure the things are sound behind you before you can move forward, you know.
Yeah. Now, the underage structures, there isn't quite as much travelling. There's an element of regionalisation, well, maybe north of a sort of a Dublin-Galway line?
Yeah, so basically the way it works, the first part of the season is kind of regionalised, and then depending on how you do, and sometimes you can be a victim of your own success, you can qualify for the elite phase or the tier 2 or tier 1, and depending on where you end up in that, in certain years you could end up travelling to the likes of Wexford and Limerick and Treaty. And so some of our kids, like their R15's last game of the season was away to Cork last year, which is no problem, because for some reason it was at a registration night tonight in the base centre, and for some reason a lot of our teams and a lot of our boys love travelling in. They love getting on buses and travelling, whatever it is about people from Donegal. So yeah, it didn't bother them one bit. They travelled down and they played Cork and had a really good result down there, and all up and down in the one day, there was no issue. So that's the kind of thing you have to do. And that's why I keep probably repeating myself. It is a tough gig, but it's very rewarding at the same time, you know.
Now, there is a pathway there, and I suppose as a coach, nothing would please you more than seeing some guy or girl coming in maybe at under 13 level and or even earlier and going up through the ranks and then eventually getting into the first team, because that's, I suppose, the plan in theory.
Yeah, I know you sit down and you put that pathway out and we've lovely graphics up to say this is the pathway at the club, but when it actually does happen and work, it is quite satisfying, you know, to see it, and it's more important for the current players and the players coming behind these boys that they see, there is that carrot dangling in front of me, you know, that I can play for the first team. It is a realistic option for them. So like there's Aaron, just for example. Aaron came in when he was 12 and a half years of age.
This is Aaron McLaughlin, and
he's going up through every team, and now he's in the first team, and he's very much part of the first team panel. And so it's nice when these things happen, and it gives heart and it gives confidence to the boys below that if they work hard enough, that chance can come their way as well.
And players with Harps at underage level getting into Republic of Ireland squads, it certainly inspires others within the camp.
Yeah, that's it. And that's what it's all about. You're always trying to raise the standards each year. And when players like Oisin Cooney and Aaron McLaughlin come through and break into, and they view me, that's a tough place to get in. As you can see, all these underage international teams are flying at the moment. And that's purely because of the academy system in the country is getting better and better each year. And a lot of these teams years ago, you might have the players coming back over from Man United and Liverpool's and Celtics. Now these players are being coached and trained and housed at their own local teams in Dublin or Galway. And that's what the teams are being made up of. And they're going out and they're not only competing, but they're beating the likes of Belgium and all these full-time academies that have millions to spend. So, as ever, Irish people are punching above their weight, and it's brilliant. And it's even more difficult for boys up around the Northwest to try and break into these international teams. So, for Oisin and Aaron to break in and start making waves in there, it's a big achievement than it was even years ago. So, it gives the boys below them that the confidence that maybe they can still break in and still have a chance, you know, because it is a huge deal. And it's something we're very proud of at the club, you know.
And Oisin Cooney, a goalkeeper of some considerable talent. Donegal seems to have almost a production line of pretty good goalkeepers. We've plenty of international history in that one.
Yeah, whatever that is. I don't know what it is, but Oisin, yeah, he certainly has the potential. He made obviously his debut there at the end of the season down in Bray, and he didn't let himself down by no stretch of imagination. So Oisin's off for the 17s now on Thursday, so that'll be brilliant for him. He's travelling to the UK to play in a challenge game for under 17s, so that'll be another brilliant experience for him. But as I said, it's just damn near impossible at times for our players up around here to break into the, or from any part of the country, because it's so tough to get into these sites. So when they do get in, you can definitely vouch that they deserve to be in, because they must be doing really well at their clubs, you know.
Finally, Kevin, just back to the first team, and Darren Murphy, of course, has a lot of contacts in the Irish League and knows it inside out. He knows it more than he knows the Airtricity League. Players in the north, they have one huge advantage, and that's the lack of travel. You can be back for almost for your tea most Saturday evenings. Do you think, you know, playing on a Friday night is a big disadvantage for Harps, that sometimes players have to take time off work? In the past, we saw Harps sometimes playing on a Saturday. Does this ever come up for debate, Saturday or Friday night, or which is best?
No, well, it hasn't come up for debate over the last couple of weeks, but no, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I can see how it can be difficult for players. And because when you're in our line of work, most of the 90% of the players are still working. And so we do have to take that leave off. And as you illustrated earlier on in the conversation, there's a lot of miles and a lot of away games this year. So there'll be a lot of days off work. And that's kind of part and parcel of the League of Ireland. But yeah, I can see the attraction of playing in the Irish League. And because, as you say, what's the furthest away trip? Maybe an hour and a half. An hour and a half when we get to stop at a shop maybe for a break, and then along wherever we're going. So yeah, I can see the advantages of playing the Irish League, and sometimes it's that wee bit more difficult to attract players that are off the standard to come to the League of Ireland for that reason, you know. But yeah, if the players are ambitious enough and they want to play for a club of the stature of Finn Harps, then that's part of the commitment levels they're going to have to go for and try and we try and sell the club as best we can. But if the players are there in the Irish League and they want to play for Finn Harps, we will certainly go after them, Chris. And as you said, Darren has many contacts at all the clubs in the north, so maybe an avenue we look at when the transfer window does open, you know.
Yeah, because it's probably fair to say over the years the traffic's been more from Donegal to the Irish League than Irish League to Donegal.
Yeah, the talent's there. You know what I mean? There's a lot of good players in the county, and you can see it with a lot of the Irish League clubs are coming and picking up players. So it can be more difficult for Finn Harps to attract these players, especially when they can still do their full time work Monday, Friday, and head away on a Saturday and play their game. So. But again, that's up to us to try and sell the club. And I'm sure, like every player we've seen so far, we only want players at the club that want to be here and want to play for Finn Harps. And that's the main thing for us, you know.
So in conclusion, Kevin, you know, a lot of work being done on and off the field. Things won't happen overnight, but in the medium to long term, you're certainly upbeat and confident that better times lie ahead for Finn Harps.
Yeah, absolutely. I know sometimes it can look doom and gloom, your position on the table and stuff like that, but there's a lot of good stuff going on at the club. There's a lot of stuff that we aim for in 2023, and we ticked a lot of boxes. So we just need to build on that. And obviously, we want to be way more competitive on the pitch than we were last year.
and still add the, all the stuff that's going on in the background, because that's the most important thing, you know.
Kevin McHugh speaking to Chris Ashmore following the announcement this week that he, of course, as well as being head of academy, has now joined the first team coaching staff too. Okay, time for a break here on The Score. We'll be back with more after these.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports, with great gift ideas for everyone on your list this Christmas, in-store and online at michaelmurphysports.ie.
Welcome back to The Score programme. Well, our feature match this weekend is on the hurling front, where Satanta, the Donegal champions, are playing Air Og of Carrickmore of Tyrone in the Ulster Hurling Intermediate Club Championship Final. Owen Begg is the venue on Saturday. 1:30 is the throw-in time, and there'll be full match coverage from that game here on Highland in association with the Villa Rose Hotel and Spa. It's a massive game for Satanta because no Donegal club has ever won the Ulster Hurling Intermediate Club Championship before. I've been looking ahead to that game with a sports editor of the Donegal News, Ryan Ferry.
Listen, it's a big day for Satanta on Saturday. They're the first Donegal club to ever reach the intermediate hurling decider, and they're in with a shout of becoming champions. So they are, because they've come through two really tough games, Ryan, where they played impressive hurling, and they'll be hoping that that sticks to them come final day.
Yeah, it definitely will, Oisín. Like, I was at both their quarterfinal against Ballinascreen and then their semi-final against Middletown. And, you know, like, this is no fluke that they've got through to this stage. They were, you know, they beat Ballinascreen quite comfortably. Middletown were in last year's intermediate final. And, you know, there was a bit of good fortune with a missed penalty at the end of the game from the Armagh side. But, you know, Satanta were definitely well in that game, and maybe they'd say they deserve their wee bit of lady luck on the day. And, you know, they've shown that they're more than capable of playing at this level. And, you know, they'll be eyeing up the silverware this Saturday in Owen Begg, no doubt about it.
Yeah. What about their opposition? What can we expect from Carrickmore?
Well, you know, Carrickmore, it has to be said, they played their semi-final just before Satanta, and they caused quite a surprise by beating Keekums Craigan from Antrim. You know, a couple of Antrim senior players, very highly rated side. They were expected probably to go on and win this competition, but they didn't quite manage it. And, you know, it was the Tyrone, plays for Tyrone, Sean O'Grogan, who scored four goals in the first half from full forward for Carrickmore that day, and they were able to keep their noses in front. So, you know, it was a massive victory for Carrickmore. I think I'm right in saying that no Tyrone team has ever won the Ulster Intermediate title either. So, you know, there's a huge amount at stake, and, you know, the teams probably know each other from down through the years playing challenge games and things like that, you know. I think from what I gather, Johnny and Cormac Munro, who would have played a bit for the Tyrone football team in recent years, are playing for Carrickmore, and, you know, they will be very fit and strong competitive players. They've also got Brian McGurk and Oisin Daly and Rory Sleen, who are highly rated hurlers as well. So, yeah, definitely we'll put it up to Satanta, but I'm sure the men from the Cross will be going to Owen Begg full of belief and that they can get the job done.
Yeah, and where they've got to now at a provincial level, this has been building over the last couple of years, so it has, Ryan, and you mentioned about the quality of player that Carrickmore have. Satanta have a very, very high level of hurlers, so they do as well on their squad.
Yeah, and they're seasoned, Oisin, and they're battle-hardened. You know, they've been before, they were in the Ulster Junior Championship last year. They won it. They've had a run in the Ulster Junior Championship before. You know, so they're well used to winter hurling. They're well used to being out at this time of the season and training and preparing, and they're primed and ready to get there under the guidance of Niall Cleary and Kevin Campbell. And, yeah, like, you know, you've Declan Coulter, you've Danny Cullen, you've Jared Gilmore, has been on fire this year. You've Rory Campbell, who's a very exciting young hurler, as is Josh McGee Cronley and Oisin Marley. Then at the back line, you know, Mark Callaghan's a sticky defender. Steve McBride, who actually got injured in the semi-final, hopefully he'll be fit to play and maybe go up square off against Sean O'Grogan this weekend. And, you know, that might be worth the admission fee alone, because Steve McBride's a very good defender for the Donegal County team. So, yeah, and Kevin Campbell's been playing in nets this year, Oshin, which is an interesting one. Like, he was their chief marksman for many years, and he's in goal now, and his puckouts have been very important along this journey for them. So, yeah, there's a good spread of strength throughout the team, and, you know, plenty of firepower as well, which is what you need at this stage of the season.
Yeah. Finally then, Ryan, of what you've seen, you'd be confident the Satanta can lift that trophy come Saturday afternoon?
Well, listen, you know, it's an Ulster final. It's always going to be a tight game. But I think if you had said to Satanta a month ago, listen, boys, you're going to get two victories here and you're going to be playing Carrickmore in the final, I think they would have bit your hand off for it. Like, and that's not to say that they'll be taking the Tyrone champions for granted, but I think both teams will see this as a huge opportunity. And yeah, I think Satanta, I think they'll push it very, very close, and I fancy they might just come out on top.
It's Ryan Ferry, sports editor of the Donegal News, looking ahead to that tie for Satanta on Saturday. And once again, just to remind you, we will of course have full live match commentary here on Highland as from the 1:30 throw-on time. Moving on to horse racing, and Oisin Orr has had a successful year over the last number of weeks. He was of course on board Spirit Dancer, where he and Spirit Dancer won the lucrative Bahrain International Trophy for trainer Richard Fahey, on board a horse that was part owned by former Manchester United manager Sir Alex Ferguson. The 6-year-old was heavily backed from 40-1 to 16-1 in the hours leading into the race, and the Donegal jockey rode him superbly to pull clear in the final furlong and land the $1 million prize. It has been a good year for Orr, who had his most successful year in his professional riding career in England, where he took over 60 plus wins for Richard Fahey this year, and he's looking to build this year and continue it into 2024 and chase more success and more big wins. Earlier today, I caught up with Oisin, who joined me on his holiday break to speak about that one on a Spirit Dancer and what he hopes for next year. A lot has happened since the last time we spoke, and I suppose we'll get straight into it. You were on Spirit Dancer, which won the Bahrain Trophy, with Alex Ferguson, of course, as part of the owners. Fair to say that's one of the highlights of your career, Oisin, for sure?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it was great. Sir Alex and a few of his friends were over there, and look, it was a great day, but I suppose there was a bit of pressure on when having him there, but look, the horse went and won well, and it's onwards and upwards for him, I think.
Yeah, he finished very strongly that day, so he did.
Yeah, he did, but look, he's been a horse that's been improving all year, and I think, look, he's definitely gone the right way to go to the top level, hopefully.
Yeah, and what was that whole experience like for you out in Bahrain?
It was a good experience. I went out the week before, so I flew out the day before the horse came, and then I brought him out all week. He'd been in good form, and he was a big price, but I thought he had a chance anyway on form. But look, it was great when he went and won, and he beat them easily enough, so it was great.
Yeah. Was that one bigger than the one you had in the ledger a couple of years ago?
Probably. Looking through the horses, it probably was a Group 1 race, but look, it was a Group 2, and any Group 1 you win is hard, so the ledger probably tops it. But look, hopefully that horse can go on to and run in the bigger races next season.
Yeah. And will you be on that horse next season, Oisin?
Well, that's the plan anyway. Hopefully we'll, as long as we keep winning, I think we'll be okay to stay on him.
Yeah. Listen, impressive horse he is as well. What other horses stood out for you this year that you were on?
Well, look, I had plenty of winners. Richard's had a lot of good 2-year-olds. There was Mark, he finished second in Ascot. There was plenty. I wouldn't really single them out. But look, it was my best season number-wise. So If we can keep that going next year, we'll be delighted.
Yeah, 60 plus ones. I think it was 64 ones in the season for you, Oisin, in the GB flat circuit and the GB flat season. And as you said, it was one of your best. It was probably one of the best moves that you made in your career, deciding to go to the UK.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I was struggling in Ireland at the end of when I was getting the job offer to go over for and work for Richard Fahey was great. And it's my first proper season over here, I suppose. Last year I went over kind of halfway through the season. So, look, we got a good run at it and we had plenty of winners, so it was great.
Yeah, which of the circuits do you like over there the best? Which of the courses, rather, do you like the best over there?
I think York is probably one of my favourites. I've had plenty of luck there, and it's not too far away from where I'm living as well. So that'd be right up there with the minute.
Yeah, and I suppose what's the plans next now for you, Oisin? What's going to happen over the next couple of months?
Well, I suppose the winter. There's not really much happening other than all weather racing, but I think in February, Spirit Dancer, I think it could be going to Saudi Arabia and then Dubai. So. Hopefully we'll get them trips and well, then it'll be nearly the start of the season again. So,
yeah. And how do you keep yourself in shape at this time of the year?
Well, at this time, of course, for a couple of weeks you have to let yourself go and enjoy it. But look, we're on holidays at the minute. But when we get back, we'll be straight back into it and working away. So, I know you definitely need a break every once in a while.
Yeah, you do. And you still keep in touch with the other Donegal jockeys. I know your big buddies with Dylan and Luke Sawyer.
Yeah, definitely. I speak to them every day. So we're still friends anyway. And look, they're both doing great as well.
Yeah. Just finally then, who was the person that influenced you the most over your career and helping you become a jockey that you are today, Oisin?
I'd say my father, to be honest. I suppose he pushed us to go down, well, not to go down that route, but he sort of steered us towards that. And look, he's brought us around the country when we were younger and got us going. So I suppose it's repaying him now. I suppose it keeps him happy, and he seems to enjoy every winner as much as me.
Yeah, does he be over much in England with you?
Yeah, he's been over a couple of times, yeah. But then I come back for Christmas, so yeah. We'll see them all then.
He'll be looking to go to Dubai with you.
No, I'm sure he'd take the trip if he got it. That's for sure.
Listen, Oisin, we might see you over Christmas, sure, when you're home. And thanks for taking the call, and well done on your success this year. And we look forward to more next year.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks very much for having me. Thank you.
Good to catch up with Oisin Oro. Took time out from his winter holiday to speak to us on Highland Sport today. Okay, we have another break to take, but we'll be back with motorbikes and Richard Kerr after these.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports, with great gift ideas for everyone on your list this Christmas, in-store and online at michaelmurphysports.ie.
In the final parts of the Score programme, we now hear from Richard Kerr. The Donegal rider has been named the Pirelli National Superstock Champion for 2023. He did finish runner-up to Dan Linford, but it was announced this week following an investigation into the final two rounds of Brands Hatch that a tribunal disqualified Linfoot due to a breach of class technical regulations on his Honda bike. It all meant that Kerr has now been elevated to the top of the championship standings, finishing 22 points ahead of Linford, and he is the winner. Kerr, of course, rode superbly throughout the year on his AMD Honda, and he has hopes now of stepping up to superbikes in 2024. Richard joined us in studio earlier today. Richard Kerr, National Superstock Champion, you're welcome to the studios of Highland.
Thanks for having me, Oisin.
There's a nice ring to that, doesn't it?
Something I didn't think I'd hear for. I always thought, you know, maybe one day, but I didn't think, you know, it would be this soon, you know, but we were there to the end, and now the day has come.
Yeah. You might just maybe give us a rundown on what actually happened since Brands Hatch and why you were awarded this title.
So after the final race at Brands Hatch, our team and I noticed that there was, which would now prove proven to be, an illegal part on the championship winning bike, and there was, it was brought to the scrutineer's attention at Brands Hatch, but nothing was done about it at the meeting. So, you know, now we're on maybe 6-7 weeks now, and in between times there's been tribunal meetings, and you know, a lot of officials and Honda members, even you know, everyone that would know the crack about this master cylinder on the bike. So whenever one came together, there was a meeting about it, and you know, it was declared that it was not a homologated part for the Honda Fireblade. So the results from Brands Hatch were excluded from Dan, so that left me with the championship win.
Yeah. They left you with the one as well in the second race of Brands Hatch, isn't that right?
Yeah, it did. And race one, yeah, we finished ahead of Dan, so it didn't change my result there. And race two, I was second in the race behind Dan, so it gave me another win to the name.
Yeah. What was your feeling when you heard that you were going to be awarded the championship? Because I would say there's a twofold thing here. Delight, you want to celebrate, but then is there something that's sitting with you, well, it should have really happened 6 weeks ago?
Well, really, after my race at Brands Hatch, I finished second, and I was really happy with second place. It was a good achievement for myself and the team. You know, I had a lot of respect for Dan. He won the championship, and at that point, I thought it was an even, fair square, you know, level playing field. And I was happy with everything until we found out that it wasn't a fair playing field, you know, and that really got to me, you know. It was like, really felt like I was robbed at that point. So as time went on, we knew what was going on. We thought that we knew then it would go in our favour, because we had a lot of evidence and proof that it wasn't a legal part. So it was just a matter of waiting it out. We were confident they had to do something about it, and the results were going to change. So to finally get the news, you know, a lot of weeks later, it was just a great feeling. Yeah. Definitely.
You and Dan had big battles through the year, because at times there wasn't even a bike length and some of the results between the battles that just two guys had.
No, we had a lot of good racing all year, you know. A lot of the races, it was so, you know, tight, and at the level we're at, you know, we're beating lap records, and we're, you know, within one, two tenths a lap on lap differences. And even over finish line, there's been plenty of races, you know, there's been a half a bike length in it. So it's been tight racing all year, you know, and just to be roared, you know, it was, as far as we know, the racing was even most of the year, but come the last few rounds, there was, you know, he had that different part on his bike, so there, I believe the advantage he would have had, it could have been different results, but it's all ifs and buts, you know. My opinion doesn't really matter in this case anymore. Everyone's going to have a different opinion, so we'll just stick to the facts for now. So it is.
What's the reaction been like, obviously, from the team and supporters? And I've seen it on social media, Richard Kerr taking the championship is a popular one, it seems.
Definitely was. Everyone that supports me is over the moon. You know, we all feel that we put in a lot of effort, and we deserve this as well. And it's been rewarding, and we had a great season. And you know, everyone's just, you know, that's what we go racing for. It's not everyone. There's been people racing 20 years maybe now, and they haven't got a British title to their name. So to have that is definitely some achievement for me, you know. And when last year was my first win in the UK, so over the moon. Obviously, Dan Linford supporters, they're not, you know, they're going to take Dan's side, and I understand that, you know. Everyone's got everyone's back. So for this end of things, and my supporters and a lot of people, you know, that involved in the race, and now they're over the moon.
Yeah. Well, then what's next? You're a champion now, so you're at Superstock. It was your second year, isn't that right?
Third
year in Superstock. So you've 3 years done of that. So obviously there's a progression here. And we'll mention the big one, the Superbikes.
The ideal thing would be to move on to Superbikes. It's a massive step, you know. A lot of Superstock riders that do real good in Superstock move up. Some do really good, you know. Some have scored podiums within their first year, and some have just struggled to adapt to the bikes. So it's somewhere I definitely want to go. I won't know how I'll do until I try, but it's a bit difficult at the minute to get a ride, because there's a few teams have pulled out for the 24 season, and that's left that there's more riders and teams. So we are in talks with teams at the minute. So there's still a lot of things to get into order first, but I'm hoping we can, you know, get something over the line and go Superbike racing next year.
Yeah. When do you expect to maybe get some word on that?
Well, I don't have even, yeah. I can't even tell a date or a time, because, you know, ideally I would have liked it last week, but at the minute it could be tomorrow or it could be 3 weeks' time. I'm just not sure yet, so hoping sooner than later.
If you were awarded the title and going by the tribunal's result that you should have been at the end of Brands Hatch, would it have opened more doors that week after that weekend?
I believe it would have, yes, because you know, first is better than second, and it's good for the CV. A lot of, you know, it's all like, it's not just about rider's performance and how good a rider is. You know, there's a lot of other boxes to tick. You know, a lot of sponsors and manufacturers and all have to agree on things. So I believe it would have, it definitely opened one or two more doors, I'm sure, because, you know, I guess you could have said Dan was ahead of me in that queue. You know, Dan sort of been on Superbike and done that before, but some people would have rather the young rider, some people would rather just a quicker rider. So at least with the results to, you know, back that up, it might have, but it's all ifs and buts.
Yeah. We have to wait and see now if the Superbike thing is going to work out. If it doesn't happen, what other options do you have?
There's always the option to do Superstock 1000. You know, I'm sure we can go down that route. It wouldn't be my ideal. It definitely wouldn't be plan A, but, you know, I would love to go racing, that's for sure. And, yeah, we can have another go at it. Like, I love going racing, but I'm always wanting to, you know, find, you know, push myself to harder limits, you know, and try and progress all the time. There's also options of moving, you know, to different championships, which there has been talks about as well. So it's all up in the air in the minute.
Okay, well, we'll wait to see what happens over the coming weeks. And fingers crossed now, the awarding of this championship is going to open up a few more doors to you. And fingers crossed you get that dream of competing in Superbikes next year. Richard, well done, and thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Oisin.
That's Richard Kerr, and we hope things work out for him now in the coming weeks and he's able to make the move up to Superbikes on the BSB. And that's it from the programme for tonight. If you missed any of the show, you will, of course, be able to recap in the sports section of our website, highlandradio.com. That's it from the Score programme for 2023. We're going to take a winter break ourselves now for the next couple of weeks, and we will be back with another Score in the early part of next year. What's left of your Thursday, have a very good evening.